You know, I was leaving my office, and I'm coming down Peel Street tonight, and I see these big signs, almost quasi-neon reds and yellows and kind of election signs, square, and talk about this is a surveillance zone, zone de surveillance, and each one has a picture on it of a suitcase left in the back seat, a briefcase left in the back seat, a camera left in the back seat with a pair of hands going for it. Now, I didn't see them this afternoon, and they've got, you know, Quebec government logos on the bottom, I think City of Montreal also. And I don't know if they're trying to warn people to be careful or they're going to install cameras on Peel Street like they did in the Latin Quarter on St. Denis Street, ostensibly to prevent drug trade and drug sales. But these were street-level cameras, and I hope that's not the purpose of them. I didn't have time to find out what they're for. And if any of you out there know, and if any of you are bothered by this, bothered either way. I mean, if this is an information campaign, it's a hell of a waste of our money. And if they're going to start installing cameras on street level, I mean, it's enough. People, don't you think it's enough? We can't smoke. We can't drink. We can't do this. We can't do the other thing. Everything's restricted. It really bothered me when I was coming down to the studio. I want to hear from any of you who know what this is about and how you feel about this kind of government overregulation. I mean, it's, you know, there's one thing about protecting you from guys like me, but I don't want to be protected from me, if I'm me. And that's why I get to feel about it. It's enough already. I also want to hear from everybody about two topics we're going to have tonight. I don't know if the liberal leadership race means anything anymore. Does liberal party mean anything anymore? You know, liberalism used to have value. It used to mean involvement and engagement with relieving suffering abroad. It used to mean raising people up from poverty. It used to mean rewarding individual initiative, but not with untrammeled privilege and preference. Now, what have we really got out there? I mean, do these people really remember what industrial liberalism is? Not capital L liberalism, small L liberalism. Seems to me the Conservative Party are more liberal, classically liberal than the liberals. They want to roll back government and leave us alone. They remember what it means to be involved in fighting for freedom. All the things that liberals used to be. We're going to talk with Angela Persichelli to see whether this leadership race really has some resonance for anybody, or is just a bunch of bumpkins stumbling over each other in a party that's gone completely mindless, that can't tell right from wrong, and doesn't know a policy if it's stood up and hit in the face. In our second half hour, we're going to be looking at this whole question of what's going to happen post this Middle East crisis. And I don't think the crisis is over. I think there'll be more fighting still. But we've got the news today, of course. The Lebanese government has said they're not going to disarm Hezbollah. And, of course, that was the basis for Resolution 1701. Hezbollah is saying they won't show their arms in public, so they won't embarrass the Lebanese government. The Israeli army is in Lebanon, of course, and they're at the Tani River. They were finally given the right to go in, and they went through it like a hot knife through butter. So the question is, will outfits like Hezbollah start doing things elsewhere? And we want to juxtapose that discussion with Jim Judd, CSIS director, his comments of this morning that they don't believe in racial profiling, of course, and there are other and better ways to get hard intelligence. And certainly the Brits proved that in the police work that was done before the latest bomb plot. And indeed, CSIS proved that in the Toronto 17 case. So we're going to be looking at all of that, and we want to hear from you, and we'll be back with our first guest right after this break. Or email us at info@iapm.ca. But right now, I want to hear from you. I want to hear from you whether this liberal leadership race has any resonance with you. We've had changes of policy, changes of direction. One candidate is for the foreign policy of the Ghanaian government. The other candidate is against it. The third candidate apologizes for it. We've got left wing, right wing. Nobody can raise any money. Is anybody saying anything to you that means anything? Latest piece of news is we have the first candidate to drop out, very able and capable minister in the former government, Maurizio Bevilacqua, who's now supporting Bob Rae. And to get some perspective on whether the Liberal Party has anything liberal about it anymore, we're joined with who I consider to be one of the best political comps in the country, and that's my personal and educated opinion, Angela Persichelli of the Hill Times. Angela, welcome.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be with you on air.
Angelo,
congratulations that you have your show on during the week, too.
Thank you very much. Angelo, you know, I like you because you call it as you see it every time. Does this race mean anything anymore? I'll tell you why I'm asking, as I've asked our callers and as I've asked our listeners. Two things struck me the past week. Michael Ignatieff comes out with a strong comment in support of a stronger Canadian foreign policy and a support of Harper's defense and support of Israel. Bob Rae comes out against it, and Ignatieff then apologizes for it. Yesterday, you've got Maurice Bevilacqua, who is a very able minister, but certainly center-right, and perhaps he was the first rational of the man of the person of the candidates who realized that, you know, this race with its insane restrictions on fundraising wasn't something that was worth pursuing. He gets out of the race. He's backing Bob Rae. Now, Bevilacqua and still remembers what Rae did in almost bankrupting Ontario, except Bob Rae, the former socialist, is backed by major big business represented by his brother. Is there anything small-L liberal in this Liberal Party, or can this party not recognize a policy if it stood up and hit it in the face? I mean, liberals used to be that great quote from Churchill, to raise people from oppression at home and abroad, to reward individual enterprise, but not with untrammeled privilege and preference. Those were standards. Do any of these capital L liberals have standards of anything?
The Liberal Party more and more reminds me of the former Christian Democrats in Italy. They were everything for everybody. They were everything that you would like them to be. The Liberal Party
kind of like you and me, Angela. We don't tick anybody off, right?
Look, the Liberal Party at this time is just like a mirror. They look like the person that is in front of it. And there is no specific ideology, there is no specific direction they are going. They talk about policy. Let's look at, for example, the accusation of the interim leader, Bill Graham, about the position taken by Stephen Harper on the conflict in Middle East.
Right.
He was saying it's measured, the other guy was saying it's not measured. What did he mean, not measured? You know, what he means when he says that, what is a measured reaction of Israel? How he judges a measured reaction?
Well, I think Bill Graham would say anything just to oppose.
In terms of how many buildings they can bomb, how many people they kill, how do you judge that? You have to take a position. So they have only one position, the Liberal Party, and at the present time. And the position is not to take a position on anything.
You know, I remember Woodward and Bernstein, when they were investigating Watergate and they were looking at their sources, every time they got a source who sort of said something but didn't say something, they would call it a non-denial denial.
Well,
a non-position position is what we got.
Absolutely. Let's look at, they say everything, they do the contrary of what they say, the contrary of what they do, and the contrary of what they believe. Look at the Kyoto. They signed Kyoto, and they don't care about the agreement. In fact, the situation is worse, and even worse than the Americans. They are accusing, they are talking about, for example, childcare. They were there for 13 years, and they did nothing, and then now they are saying that Canadian government, or Stephen Harper's government, is against childcare. I mean, they say everything. We are used to receive...
Angelo, sorry, we're just having some technical problems. A voiceover coming from somewhere.
The proposal we made at Foreign Committee Affair
Angelo, go ahead. We'll talk. Angelo, hang on a second. We'll just take a break and fix this technical problem.
Angelo, just like the Liberal Party, everybody talks.
Angelo, we don't know where this is coming from, but we'll go to commercial. Come right back.
Mr. Giuseppe, you've seen the comments from Bob.
And we're talking about the Liberal leadership race, whether it has any resonance for you, the public. We want to hear from you. We're talking with Angelo Persichelli, for my money, one of the best political columnists in the country, in the Hill Times. Angelo, we fixed the gremlins. We apologize for that. You were saying in this leadership race, you were saying it only half jokingly that not only do they not have policy, but everybody's talking over everybody. You know a lot of these guys real well. You've observed a lot of them real well. What does a Maurizio Bevilacqua have to gain by going to a Bob Rae when ideologically he would be more center-center-right? What's the play here?
I believe that everybody's looking about the future when they make a decision. And before they look at the decision about the future, the first thing they look at is what is going to be for them. Now, let's look at, in my opinion, going with Ignatieff. First of all, I don't believe that there is so much room for growth for Ignatieff because so many people are there, and I don't believe that any new person going there can have a lot of space. So there is...
He pushes the momentum by going over to another guy.
Yes, absolutely. But in terms of positioning himself, let's say that Ignatieff wins. What is he going to gain? There are many other people he has to take care of. So it's very hard for a new person to be there and be relevant within the campaign because within the Mr. Ignatieff campaign is very well, I don't want to say very well organized, but definitely there are many people there. Going there, you are just another one.
It's a big crowd. Meanwhile, he gives Ray some momentum, and if at the convention Ray becomes important, bringing a lot of people over, Bevilacqua is somebody that Ray owes a lot to just to get him into the top tier.
That's right. And there is another element there. There are some of the people, Paul Martin team, that are with Michael Ignatieff.
Right.
Bob Ray, we know that is part of the team that you know Jean Chrétien was used to enjoy, starting from, of course, John Ray and Eddie Goldenberg and other people that Maurizio Bevilacqua was very close to. So in case Bob Ray wins, Maurizio Bevilacqua has a better chance to position himself. And the left and right means very little these days, especially in the Liberal Party.
There's a lot of criticism of this race, of course, because of the preponderance of candidates from the greater Toronto area. I think about 8 of the 10 that are left. What do you see going on in the GTA, where a lot of these guys and men and women seem to be spending their time? Is it a momentum thing? Is Ignatieff really up front? Is there an anybody but Ignatieff undercurrent starting?
Well, Ignatieff definitely has a powerful team, even though, and one of the reasons, and I was writing so long ago, and the decision made by Mr. Bevilacqua confirms that that's an element that will stop Mr. Ignatieff for growing in the future. He has, in my opinion, reached a very high a point, but it's very hard for him to go beyond. What I believe that in Montreal, if he's going to have between 40 and 45% of the delegates, he has a chance that other people say, okay, let's give a little
push. On the first round, you mean?
On the first ballot,
yeah. The first ballot.
But if Mr. Ignatieff is going to get less than 40% on the first ballot, he's finished. Because many people, they are shopping around.
Angela, I'd ask you to stay with us through the news break, and I want to discuss with you after the news break exactly who they would coalesce around and who's the most likely to come out of that kind of a scenario. And Montreal will be right back after the news. And email us at info@iepm.ca. We're talking about the Liberal leadership race. Who's turning you on? Who's ticking you off? And does it really matter? And with us is Angela Persichelli, columnist for the Hill Times. And Angelo, you just said before the news break that if Michael Ignatieff gets less than 40% on the first ballot, he's in trouble and there'll be a lot of coalitions and coalescing going on. Who are the main guys and why is 40% such an important threshold?
Well, it's important because it's a number that tells other delegates and other candidates that he has the power to go easily beyond the 50%. And as I was saying before, it's important for many of them to be on the winning side. Now, if you get 40% on the first ballot, definitely there is a much of betting on you. And I don't think that many people are willing to do that, especially with Ignatieff, because as I was saying before, there is the crowd, it's very thick around him, and the possibility for you to gain position is much tougher. So at least you want to be almost sure that he's going to win. And 40%, it's a clear indication that he has the potential to do so.
The coalescing that's going on, it can't be regional. I mean, Stéphane Dion is the candidate from Quebec. It's not going to be, you know, the women candidates against the men. What separates any of these people? Have you seen anything really that separates any of these candidates from the other?
Well, not really. They talk in very generalities. They don't take strong positions. Actually, the only one that has taken a position is Joe Volpe when we talk about the Middle East conflict. But all the others basically are saying, well, we want peace. Everybody wants to have peace. And the problem is how you are going to achieve it. But there is another point that I was making this week on the Hill Times, and I was saying that basically whatever position we take, it's going to have zero influence in the Middle East process, seeking peace and doing whatever. Canada basically has no power whatsoever. So the position and the debate we are having here, it's just going to have an impact on internal politics. It's going to have an impact in within the political organizations and maybe within the electorate. But I think it's most of it. It's posturing about the people saying, you know, we are on that side or the other side. But the fact of the matter is that whatever they say and whatever they do, they are going to have no effect whatsoever on the peace process. At least at the present time, Canada has no influence whatsoever on the peace process in Middle East.
But besides the Middle East, you know, all these candidates are invoking the images of Trudeau or the images of the Liberal Party as the party of the Charter of Rights, of individual consequence, except it's the Tories that are talking about rolling back big government and getting them out of our underwear and stopping the statocratic engineering. We're not hearing, unless I'm missing it, anything from the Liberal candidates that reflects small-L liberalism, and small-L liberalism as defined as government that recognizes the sovereignty of the individual and doesn't seek to do statocratic engineering. Have they got nothing on that agenda? Is there nobody standing up on that issue? And if they're not, should Canadians even care and just stick with a prime minister that seems to be at least giving us back some pride and purpose?
Well, let's face it, Canadians are not just tuning in. They could say whatever they want, but the only people paying attention to what they say, it's you and me and the other colleagues in the media. But Canadian people, they just don't care. They are starting, in my opinion, to be back and paying attention to the political environment in general and to Liberal leadership in particular. At the end of September, beginning of October, we are going to see some movement and people are going to make up their mind. Even though at the present time, the only thing that counts, it's organization. If you're organized, you can collect new members and you can organize them in a way that they can elect delegates to and bring them in Montreal. Definitely it's going to have an effect.
And
all the other discussions, I mean, Canadians are not paying attention.
And even before the convention, which is December, the super weekend in September is, remind me and all our listeners, delegate weekend is the end of September, right?
That's a very important. It's the super weekend when the Liberals are going to choose the delegates to send to Montreal. So they are, and this is important, contrary to the other political organization, the first ballot basically is decided on the super weekend at the end of September. The people elected in a certain group, in a certain list, they must vote for that candidate. The only people that are going to express their opinion freely on the first ballot are the people, the ex officio. More or less around 800 people, I don't know how many are going to show up, let's say 500 people, 600 people, they can express freely their opinion on the first ballot. All the others are bound to the vote they are going to make at the end of September.
Well, Angelo, you and I will be talking several times before the end of September, but we're going to be looking at that super weekend, and I thank you for joining us tonight.
It's my pleasure.
Buona sera.
Bye.
Montreal will be back with you right after this. Well, as you just heard, Angelo Persichelli of the Hill Times, pretty adamant, very passionate about the subject of how the Liberals are playing politics with the Middle East issues, and while the Liberals play politics with the Middle East crisis, and its security ramifications are going to become an important part of the political agenda of any governing party, and certainly taking a lot of time of our government and other governments. And with us to discuss two aspects that have come up today is David Harris, former director of Priorities and Planning for CSIS, and the president of Insignis Research in Ottawa. Welcome, David. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Beryl. I was incidentally chief of strategic planning at CSIS, so just a point of detail there.
You know, the number of times we've been on, I think I've made a mistake twice already. Next time, I expect you to email me and remind me not to do it again. David, there were two stories that came out today that to me juxtaposed one to the other in terms of where we're going forward on the war on terror. On the one hand, Resolution 1701, fine, ceasefire based on the fact that Lebanon was going to go in, disarm Hezbollah, and Israel was going to do a staged withdrawal. Today we not only heard, of course, that Hezbollah refuses to disarm, but we heard from the Lebanese government that it has no intention of disarming it. And the Hezbollah leader is offering some kind of a strange little arrangement where he will, quote, not display their arms in public and embarrass the Lebanese government. Now, this raises the question of where are these guys going to go and how much are they going to take it to what level? And on the other hand, what is Western response? Now, we've just seen the foiled bomb plot in London. It was good, hard, intelligent work. It certainly, according to the British government, didn't involve stuff like racial profiling. Director Jim Judd, director of CSIS, came out this morning and said, well, he doesn't consider racial profiling. He considers racial profiling stupid, I think, is what he said, and ineffective. What tools do we use, and how much hard intelligence can we count on when we know that, number one, CSIS is understaffed in terms of field agents, number two, Hezbollah and their confreres are really going to take it. They're going to take the show on the road sometime soon if the West doesn't strike even harder.
Well, you know, I'd have to start. I mean, I've got to tell you, in terms of fresh news, I was just listening to what some facetiously refer to as the military wing of Hezbollah, namely As It Happens on CBC.
Ah, yes, As It Happens, of course, that repository of political correctness.
I actually, you know, it's even worse than that.
I heard they're hanging Hezbollah flags out. Is that true?
Well, you know, this evening, the very first interview that was done by CBC As It Happens, and I cannot imagine what their producers...
Why do you aggravate yourself by listening to that?
It's amazing.
Listen, if it helps, you can call in here. We'll have you on a guesses every night.
Well, I'll tell you, it's absolutely amazing.
What did they do?
They had a Hezbollah MP on as the sole source of discussing what's been going on the Lebanese front.
So they had one of the Hezbollah MPs talking about the position of the Lebanese government.
Now, that's kind of interesting because, as you well know, Hezbollah is a terrorist organization that's been banned under the Criminal Code of Canada.
Correct.
So I'm just wondering what our tax dollars are doing, giving 10 minutes of free nationwide, international, in fact, propaganda value to Hezbollah.
Well, you know what? A lot of people were wondering that in Montreal when a peace rally ended up to be a Hezbollah rally. And when I wrote an op-ed called Lebanon Shares the Guilt, one of the questions we asked was, hey, where were the police? Didn't the police know that Hezbollah is outlawed and you had this, you know, a little, if not a sea, certainly a large lake of Hezbollah flags and posters and T-shirts? Where were the cops?
And this is going to come back to bite us, and we needn't be surprised if our allies start talking about Canada as a terrorist haven. We're getting all the evidence anybody's going to need against us on that level, unfortunately. So, it's quite right. As for your basic question about the arrangement, the agreement, the ceasefire today, it's got to be a farce. Hezbollah has said in the most somber, committed terms that its one and only objective is to destroy Israel and, of course, turn Lebanon into a theocratic state on the model of Iran. So they're not going to give up their weapons until that's achieved. And we know that the Lebanese army, so-called, cannot be relied on to do that. It hasn't been instructed to do so in the past. It doesn't have the military capability now. And in any event, it's surely got to be as heavily infiltrated with Hezbollah sympathizers as any other group.
Well, I was very interested in a comment that Nasrallah made yesterday, where in an address he actually admitted that they were now short of funds and materiel, but they were continuing the struggle.
Well, I guess that was why the Hezbollah MP on CBC Radio's As It Happens put out a call for money, if you please.
Really?
So, yes, so I guess...
So wait a minute. So just minutes ago on CBC's As It Happens, a Hezbollah MP used Canadian Airways.
That's it.
CRTC regulated, right. Canadian broadcast standards.
Right.
To ask for money from Canadians to help Hezbollah, which is considered a terrorist organization by Canada and the United States.
And
the CBC did that.
And they didn't even bother going through the exercise, the lip service of having somebody representing a liberal, pluralist, democratic mode, model, or position. In contrast, that was the sole interview.
Outstanding. We're outstanding. We're doing it again. David, stay with us. We're just going to pay a bill or two ourselves, and we'll be right back. Yeah, well, the last angry man just got a lot angrier. We're talking to David Harris, former chief of strategic planning for CSIS, and we're talking about the effects of Resolution 1701, the ceasefire with Lebanon, saying they're not going to enforce the disarming of Hezbollah. And David just informed us that, as it happens, just had a Hezbollah MP on. And during the interview, actually made an appeal for funds. Now, of course, Hezbollah is an outlaw terrorist organization in Canada and the United States. Jeez, Dave, you know, makes you wonder.
Well, yeah, it may at least be time to phone up CBC or CRTC or someone to see who's looking after our basic...
Nah, you know the Bureau of Broadcast Standards is too busy monitoring, you know, shows like mine in case I say a swear word.
It's come to that. It's come to that. But, you know, you look at what is going on and the amount of airtime that was offered and the value, the cost of that, plus the humanizing of a terrorist organization that, let's not forget, has done targeting reconnaissance of Canadian sites in Canada. So it becomes a self-destructive exercise to really humor this bunch. We should be tracking them down.
David, talk about tracking them down. You were on the inside of all this for many years. Toronto 17, good intelligence work, multi-agency, multidisciplinary. London, the same thing. But how long can we rely in Canada on a CSIS force that, as far as field agents, and I dare say even the RCMP, and perhaps, and you would know better, but I dare say even the RCMP, undermanned in this area. Don't we need more boots on the ground here? Just for hard intelligence work?
I mean, I suppose we do. The RCMP and CSIS seem to have done a tremendous job based on everything we see in the public domain. One of the difficulties is that we're starting to present ourselves with insuperable odds. We've discussed the immigration and refugee situation.
Right.
On top of everything else, so the poisoning of young minds, often by radical Wahhabists, so Saudi Arabian-oriented religious teachings, on top of all of that homegrown poison that we could be looking at, we're bringing 250,000 people in our immigration stream every year. And we know that the vast number of those people will be fine folk, but how do you screen those kinds of numbers? And they're cumulative, of course. So, you know, I don't know, every 4 years you're dealing with 500,000 new people. Can you stay on top of that and the threats? I don't know. And I know that the British government recently, certainly some of their police forces are themselves saying, we can only go on for so long. I believe the Scots, of all groups, have said that they're not sure they can keep up the pace much longer.
Australia has instituted some pretty tough immigration measures, and they've taken one-third the number of immigrants we do. Is it time to reorder our immigration system, both as to the point system and as to, frankly, start looking at where the immigrants are coming from just to reduce the possible threat level?
Well, it's a difficult problem.
It's not a matter of racial profiling. It's just a matter of, look, we know they're there, and we know they're coming out of there, and we can't screen them all.
A great difficulty is that when you look at countries that traditionally would have seemed to have been non-extremist jurisdictions, say Britain or France, we know how fully penetrated and infiltrated they are by Islamic extremist groups, among others. And can we really relax about bringing people in from any specific jurisdiction? In other words, can we filter on the basis of a country and have it mean anything? I think overall what we've got to do is really look at the numbers, the absolute numbers, so that we ensure that we've got absorbable numbers. We have to send clear messages to newcomers about the charter values that apply, tolerance, liberal pluralism, and so on, the kinds of things you've been advocating for years, and make sure the message is really clear. Otherwise, you have people forming a variety of self-isolating colonies that wind up with anarchic and hostile views to one another, well, that's a collapse of a national system. That's not a country anymore.
Well, with authentic voices like yours, we're going to keep getting out the message. David Harris, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thanks, Beryl.
Montreal, we'll be back with you tomorrow night. Thank you to Chris Smith and Master Control, and we're out of here until tomorrow.